Crime, Wine, and Chaos contains adult language and graphic content. Listener discretion is advised.
Curiouser and curiouser, Chaos Kids. I'm Amber.
And I'm Naomi. And this is Crime, Wine, and Chaos.
Show is. Oh, man.
Hello. Curiouser and curiouser. Okay. Hi.
You know what? This is why April is volunteering to be my intro writer, because you go, okay.
No, that was literally, I mean, moments before I jumped on here, was having a conversation with someone about curiosity.
Okay. Sorry. You put the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable.
No, you just took it wrong.
Okay, yeah, or that. Okay. Tomato, tomato. How are you, sister? Sorry, my bad. Wow.
It's fine. I'm fine. Everything's great.
Every little thing is going to be all right?
I mean, yes. Yes, of course. Yes, ultimately, yes, that's true. Yeah, it's true. What can I say? I mean, we had Sissy Day yesterday.
That was amazing. Yeah.
I haven't done that in a while.
I needed that.
You left your olive oil at Ra's house.
No! God damn it.
Yeah, you did that. It's fine. She's going to bring it to Mom and Dad's on Sunday when she goes to pick up Punk. So
Punk.
She'll leave it there for you.
All right.
You can get that at the birthday dinner on Sunday.
God damn it. I am sorry, sister.
Yeah, it's fine. It's whatever. It's just like super special and like made me cry when I opened the box, but it's fine. You can just like forget about it.
Oh my God. Wow. So this is true sisterness is flaring up, Chaos Kids. True sisterness is flaring up. That's fine.
This is one of those moments where I do wish we just showed the video footage of everything so they could see your face right now.
Well, you know, and she's the older sister. So what's going to happen right now is I'm just going to take it and feel shame. I'm going to say, yeah, okay. All right. I'm sorry. I fucked up. Please still let me be part of your world.
Always. Always.
God.
Nothing will ever change that.
Oh, my God.
What about you? What's going on with you?
Thanks for asking. Well, apparently I need some ginkgo biloba. I'm a little forgetful. And not a whole lot, sister. It was a good weekend. That was fun. Mm-hmm. It's Monday. Mm-hmm. I'm tired.
Sure.
But, you know, it's all good. All good things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. I love that. Are you drinking something tonight?
I am. Thank you for asking. I'm drinking. Okay. I'll tell you a story about this, but I'm drinking a wine called Barbera Red from Silvara Cellars.
Okay.
Did I ever tell you about the time when Allison and I were driving through Linwood? This was like 20 years ago. And there was a restaurant there called AP Barbara's.
Yes.
I
remember that restaurant.
She read it as Barbara's. And I was like, Allie.
It's Barbara.
Yeah. Oh my God. She like malfunctioned.
Barbara Wawa.
Barbara Wawa. So I'm drinking a Barbera. That's what it made me think of. Mm-hmm. Oh man.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we have 4 new Chaos Kid Club members.
Oh my God. We have 4 new members since the last time we recorded, 4. Which is crazy. Chance. You guys, this is amazing.
I know. Thank you. Shall I list them off?
Yes, this is like a spike. This is a big spike in numbers in 1 week.
I love it. So we have Christine L.
Christine.
Ooh.
One of my besties.
One of your besties.
She finally found room. Finally found room on the itemized list.
Did she give up the avocado toast? Is that what she did?
I think so. Yeah.
Good
I think
for
it
you,
was
Christine.
Avocado toast. And yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have Sienna W.
Hello.
Ooh,
welcome.
Beautiful name. We have Tina S.
Tina.
Tina.
Tina, I think, is one of my friends on TikTok.
Really?
I think so. Yeah.
Sweet. And we have Jennifer P.
Jen P. Jennifer P. Welcome.
Jen P.
We're so glad to have you. I think we discussed that, like, we technically have 30 Patreons, but, like, technically 28 of them are actual Kids Club members because the other two are me and Marissa. So technically we're at 30, which means technically we're at 10 more, which means technically we should be scheduling another virtual wine night already.
I'm here for it. I am here for it.
All right, well, I'll get it on the books. I'll get it on the books. And you guys will hear all about it.
Oh, sweet. Well, do you have, you got some crime for me, sister?
Oh, yeah. Oh. I got you. Yep.
Is it a bum bum?
Yeah. I mean, of course it is. Of course it is. I'm going to tell you about Carolyn Crouch. Have you heard about Carolyn Crouch before?
That name sounds familiar.
Okay. Well, this did get some international headlines. So we're just going to jump on in here. Okay.
Okay.
On the morning of May 11th, 2021, police officers responded to a call at the residence of Carolyn Crouch and her husband, Babis Nagnastopoulos, in the city of Glykonyra, which is a suburb of Athens, Greece.
Okay.
There they found the gruesome sight of Carolyn deceased in her bed, face swollen and bruised, making her almost unrecognizable, and Babis bound and gagged next to the bed.
Okay. Does he have injuries?
Well, he had dialed 100, which is the Greek equivalent of 911, with his nose, apparently, because of his being tied up. And he told the operator that he needed an ambulance sent to his house.
Okay.
But even more disturbing, police found their 11-month-old baby daughter, Lydia, although alive, on top of Carolyn's lifeless body.
Oh, no. Oh, God.
Yeah. Chief Constable Christos Vardikos said the scene brought him to his knees and that it, quote, took days and nights thinking about it to get over it.
Oh.
Carolyn Crouch was born in Athens, Greece, July 12th.
Oh, your birthday buddy.
Mm-hmm. 2001. To parents David Crouch and Susan De La Cuesta. Carolyn is listed as a British citizen, also of Filipino descent. I assume, so David Crouch, her dad, is British. I believe I read somewhere he was born in Liverpool, and her mother is Filipino. And from what I can tell, I couldn't track down definitive clarification, but it looks like Carolyn's mom must have been married prior and had children from a previous marriage.
Okay.
That were in the Philippines.
Okay.
But when Carolyn was 8, her family, so her and David and Susan, moved to the island of Alonissos.
Okay.
It's a Greek island. It's in the Aegean Sea. And her dad, David, worked as a gas and oil executive. So it sounds like they were doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Carolyn was 15 when she met Babis on Alonissos. He's a helicopter pilot.
Jeez.
Almost 15 years her senior.
She was 15 when she met him? Is that what you said? She's 15 and he's 30?
Just, or 29 or almost 30.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. They married 3 days after Carolyn's 18th birthday.
Oh, no.
Lydia was born within their first year of marriage.
Ooh.
I think like the following June. So as the scene was processed and Babis was treated and then questioned by police, an unbelievable tale of random violence unfolded in his telling.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Babis told police in his initial statement that around 4:30 a.m., three hooded armed robbers, an Albanian gang, entered their residence through the basement window, killed the family dog by hanging it by its leash from the stair rail.
No.
Then went up to the loft where Carolyn and Babis's bedroom was located and demanded their money at gunpoint.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure, Babs. Okay.
I can't.
No, keep going. Sure. Sure.
Babis told the robbers that he had 10,000 euros and told them where they could find it. Carolyn, who knew martial arts, fought back when the robbers pointed a gun at Lydia. The leader of the robbers managed to immobilize Carolyn and then kill her by suffocating her. Before the robbers left, they tied and gagged Babis, who fainted very soon after.
He just out of fear, he just fainted.
I guess.
Did he play dead?
It was very scary.
Okay. I thought you said that Carolyn's face was swollen. Like she had been beaten or?
Not beaten.
Oh, okay. The suffocation causes swelling?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Police officers during the first investigation they made inside the residence found that the intruders had removed the memory card from the surveillance camera located on the ground floor of the residence.
They just knew how to find that?
Apparently.
Okay.
In a public statement the day after the murder of his wife, Babis was confident that the police would find the killers, saying, quote, "I hope this never happens to anyone ever again. The police know their job and they will catch the people who did this. I hope that no one else ever experiences what I went through and what my family and my wife's family have gone through."
Okay.
A few days after Carolyn's murder, Babis posted a picture of the two of them on their wedding day on Instagram with the caption, quote, "Together forever. Have a nice trip, my love."
Have a nice trip?
Mm-hmm. And then he said he was, quote, "sad that our daughter will grow up without remembering her beautiful mother, who was the joy of my life. But through her daughter, Carolyn will always be with me and with all of us. You should always look after your loved ones and enjoy your time together."
Okay. I don't know. I'm going to feel really terrible if this really did happen. And I'm like, okay, Babylon, shut up.
Like Ravi. Was that his name? Ronnie? Ravi?
Ravi. Yeah. He kind of sucked. R.I.P.
I mean, he did kind of suck. Mm-hmm. Spreading his seed.
God.
His seed is so amazing. Rose,
no one wants your seed. God.
I can't.
It's so gross.
No one wants your seed.
God. Yuck, yuck.
Oh my God. But as police dug into the investigation, things weren't adding up. Or more specifically, Babis's story was not holding water.
I'm sorry. I'm just picturing his wife gets killed and he just. Like, that's his story.
I do a great impression of a hot dog.
That's the story. God. You don't say. It's not adding up.
God. Did you see? So, and that was chaotic. Bye.
God. All right, keep going.
Okay. Firstly, that memory chip that had been taken out of the security camera was removed at 1:20 a.m., not 4:30 a.m. when Babis said the intruders had arrived.
Ah.
Additionally, there was no evidence to support that anyone had accessed the window in the basement that Babis had claimed as the entry point of the intruders. There were no fingerprints or even traces of DNA from the supposed perpetrators. There was also no evidence found on any cameras in the area of an escape vehicle moving through the neighborhood, either from residence or business cameras, after the burglary and murder had taken place.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. And then there was Carolyn's Fitbit.
Oh. Was this like in the media called like the Fitbit case or something?
No.
Oh, that's a thing. There is like a Fitbit case.
Oh, I believe that.
Okay.
It showed her heart started racing around 4 a.m. and her heart stopped at 4:11 a.m. Babis's phone call to report the robbery came in at 6 a.m. And There were apps that had been running on Babbis's phone during the time he was supposedly tied up.
Oh, technology's gonna get him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The police investigation went on for over a month. And then on June 17th, a police helicopter was sent to Alanisos, where a service was being held for Carolyn. When asked why he had to leave the island so quickly, Babbis told reporters that police had informed him that they found the ringleader of the murder and needed him to come identify him in person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Babbis said this while hugging Carolyn's mother after having just held a memorial service for her daughter.
Oh my God, that's chilling. That poor mm-hmm. mother. Mm-hmm.
Cannot imagine.
Mm-mm.
Babbis was rushed to the Attica police headquarters in Athens by helicopter from the island where he had been staying with Carolyn's family.
That's just like the, okay, yeah. Oh God, it's the so
gal, the gal who was burned in her car?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's so spooky.
And that was when police presented Babbis with the evidence that unraveled his story of the events of the night of Carolyn's murder. He spent 8 hours with the police and finally confessed that he was the murderer.
Wow. Wow. Fuck.
He said that Carolyn told him that she was planning to leave him and take her baby with her before he blurred and killed her.
He blurred?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Quote, that night we had been fighting since early in the day. At one point, she threw the baby into its bassinet and told me to get up and leave the house. She pushed me and punched me. I blurred and suffocated her, and then I staged the crime scene.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Babbis was arrested and charged with two felonies, murder committed in a calm state of mind.
What?
That's...
Is that that's premeditated? The-
I guess.
Okay.
And animal abuse and two misdemeanors, false reporting and false testimony.
Okay.
This gets twisty though. While awaiting trial, some of Carolyn's diary entries were leaked to the press. An investigation ensued to determine how these diary entries contained in a 26-page police report had made their way into the hands of the press and on social media.
No shit. Who did that?
Never got answers on that. Prosecutors banned any further publication of these diary entries, claiming they could be helpful to Babbis's defense.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the passages that did make it to the public eye included in it. Here's some of the entries. One from December 19th that said, quote, I fought with Babby again. This time it was serious. I hit him. I cursed at him and he broke down the door. All I wanted was for him to ask how I am when I woke up. I woke up so weak and tired. I am thinking of leaving. I am thinking of going to my sister. I don't know if I can keep going with Babby. I love him so much that I can't leave him, even though this relationship hurts me.
Oh.
Another entry from 2019, she wrote, last night we fought with Babby because I had a meltdown because of my hormones. I yelled at him and hit him and told him I don't want our baby. I am not well. I am very upset. I know he would never hurt my baby. My love for her is stronger than anything in the world.
Oh, she maybe had some serious postpartum stuff going on too.
Postpartum stuff mm-hmm. going on. Yeah. In July of 2020, when Lydia was a month old, Carolyn wrote, today, my little one is a month old. It's also the day I told Babby I want to leave. I feel awful. So this was like 10 months prior.
Yeah.
She goes on to say she found a house in Halandri, a suburb of Athens, and that she was thinking of leaving Babbis before she got pregnant, but eventually, quote, stayed with him because I didn't want my daughter to grow up without her parents. The diary includes several entries where Carolyn blames her hormones for their arguments and says she feels embarrassed her hormones affect her so strongly.
Her age is really showing here and it's so sad.
Mm-hmm.
Like she just
But also he's 15 years older than her.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like
he groomed her.
Mm-hmm. I know. God.
Carolyn had allegedly messaged a friend on the night of her death and telling this friend that she was leaving Babbis.
Mm-hmm.
At trial, The coroner who examined Carolyn's body contested Babbis's account, reporting that Carolyn had been attacked while she slept, which is also in line with the Fitbit data because her heart rate was low until like 4 a.m. and it just spiked at like 4 a.m. and then stopped at 4:11, which would indicate that she probably was asleep.
Yeah. Yeah. Or certainly not in, like in the middle of a fight because it would have been spiked that way too. Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The coroner told the jury that Carolyn had been subjected to a barbaric 6-minute long death by strangulation. She said Carolyn suffered a, quote, long and agonizing attempt to breathe as Babbis suffocated her.
Oh, God.
And she told the court Carolyn had severe bruising on her face. Mm. So maybe there was more than just from the strangulation.
Yeah, maybe.
And then the coroner said, quote, her husband, by contrast, who had insisted they were the targets of a robbery, had such light bruises he could go to work the next day.
Yeah. And who do you think any home invaders are going to want to incapacitate the larger man, likely, right?
Right.
He's not even good at this. I hate this guy.
No. Mm. Also, how many times, Amber?
I know.
How many times? Three dudes from another fucking race showed up in the middle of the night and attacked us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or forced me to do it. Or like how? I mean, it's just like it's always the same bullshit story.
It's total bullshit. Yeah. I know.
In fact, Carolyn was the name of the woman that worked at Morgan Stanley.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Her name was Carolyn.
Yeah.
Oh. And this was the same story her husband came up with.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Random middle of the night robbery / home invasion, whatever.
Yeah, whatevs.
On May 16th, 2022, just over a year after Carolyn's murder and approximately 1 month after the start of the trial, the joint jury unanimously found Babbis Anagnostopoulos guilty of murder committed in a calm state of mind, killing a companion animal, as well as the misdemeanors of false report and false testimony. He was sentenced to life imprisonment, which is actually like 27 years. I think that's like a lot of countries call it life, but like they actually have a max, like a cap. What that means.
Interesting.
So it's like 27 years and an additional sentence of 10 years in prison for the execution of the family dog, as well as a fine of 20,000 euros. He was also sentenced to a total of 11 years and 6 months in prison for misleading the authorities.
He got 11 years for those misdemeanors?
Yeah.
That's wild. Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't read anything that talked about like whether or not these were consecutive or concurrent sentences too, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Or if there was like minimums. After an appeal on September 29th, 2023, the Mixed Court of Appeal in Athens unanimously affirmed the initial trial's verdict, which resulted in Babbis being resentenced to life imprisonment, an additional term of 11 years and 6 months, and a total fine of 21,000 euros. So they added another 1,000 euros on there.
God.
Whatever. Much ado was made of his performance during the appeal, going so far as to apologize to Carolyn's family, but they weren't having it.
Fuck no, they weren't.
Her dad told the press, quote, "It is absolutely despicable that my daughter's killer is trying to get his prison sentence reduced because of his, quote, good behavior. The crime committed by the murderer, that of femicide, is a heinous crime that should deserve particularly severe punishment. In my opinion, men who kill their wives for whatever reason are the lowest of the low, ranking alongside pedophiles. I think it will be a sad day for women when the murderer of a defenseless woman who slept with her child will serve less than his full prison sentence. This man is beyond contempt."
Oh, good for this dad. Good for you, dad.
It was also reported in April of 2023, prior to the appeal verdict, that Babbis was receiving literal bags of letters, fan mail.
Oh, my God.
From women who said they are in love with him, believe he is innocent, that Carolyn's murder wasn't premeditated, and it all happened in the heat of the moment.
Oh, my God. He's there, Scott Peterson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, man.
And there was also a bitter court battle between Carolyn's family and Babis's family for custody of baby Lydia in between the initial trial and the appeal.
Oh.
And then just under 2 weeks before the final court date to determine custody, David Crouch told the press that he had received a letter from Babis from prison detailing how he, Babis, had gotten caught up in drug smuggling. And when he told Carolyn, she said she would leave him and that the drug lords or whatever had told Babis he needed to get rid of Carolyn.
Hmm.
David claims that Babis told him in this letter that he thought he was saving at least one of Lydia's parents so she wouldn't grow up without both of them because the drug lords would kill them both.
What? Dude, just give it a rest.
Babis's attorney said that David was making the whole thing up and that no such letter existed.
Okay.
And that it was just like part of a ploy to influence the decision of the custody courts.
God, I can't figure out how Babs turned out so fucked.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, well, no, this isn't his. This is Carolyn's dad.
Oh, I'm sorry. God, sorry.
Carolyn's dad claiming that Babis sent this letter to
him. Oh, okay. I take it all. Well, Babis probably did.
I don't know. Because, like, David Crouch is, like, obviously righteously angry and really, really hates, like, Babis and his whole family. I don't know. I don't know.
That's odd.
Or maybe Babis was trying to like curry favor with David by being like, oh no, I had a really good reason. I didn't just kill her because I'm a piece of shit.
Yeah, let me explain. You'll totally get that once I tell you this part.
Right? God. I don't know. I'm like on the fence on what I think about
okay.
that. Regardless, Carolyn's family won the custody battle and Lydia was taken to the Philippines by Susan, Carolyn's mother, to be raised there by Carolyn's cherished half-sister, Lydia's auntie. Mm-hmm. Under a court order, Babis's parents are allowed to speak to Lydia for only 1 hour a week via Skype or other electronic means.
Whoa. They don't even get to be in person with her ever?
Ooh. David, Carolyn's dad, told a local TV station, quote, I am determined that the monster who killed her mother, as well as those two ridiculous people who are his parents, will never see my granddaughter again.
Those two ridiculous people who are his parents. Oh, God. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that is the story of the tragic murder of Carolyn Crouch.
Wow. Wow. It was giving
she was like
Susan Powell vibes.
Kind of.
With the families really both fighting for the kids and Josh's dad is a fucking wackadoo and they're like, no. Yeah. Wow. God.
Yeah. Yep.
I wonder what her parents thought of him prior to that, of this 30-year-old man with their daughter.
Right? With their 15-year-old, 29 or 30 years old. But also, like, what are you going to tell a 15-year-old? I mean, I don't know. I don't know. But she was like 2 months shy of her 20th birthday when he killed her.
God, that's so young.
I know. And Lydia wasn't even a year yet.
Oh, God. Oh, that was horrible.
I'm sorry, sister. Honestly, I did this thing where I was like, I did the thing I hadn't done in a while where I went and looked at our listener demographics and saw that somebody, I don't know who you are, but we love you, is listening to us in Greece. And I was like, oh, let me see what's going on in Greece. That's how I found that.
Wowzers. That's what's going on in Greece, huh?
That's one of them. Well, that's one of the things.
That was a good one, sister. I mean, it was terrible.
Thank you.
It was a good one.
It was terrible. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely terrible. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's starting to be almost, it's like tropey now. Like how many times we tell these stories of women who are murdered by their partners and there's always these common threads, always these commonalities, you know?
Mm-hmm.
like they tell the same bullshit story. They do the same kind of shit with the family where they get them, they ingratiate themselves to their in-laws or whatever. Like they, you know, the behind closed doors, like control and abuse and the age gap. Like it just, it's all, it's like over and over and over and over again, the same fucking pattern.
It's gross. I know. Fuck.
We gotta look out for our sisters. You know, yeah, what I'm saying? We do. We gotta look out for our sisters, and they've gotta be more careful. We gotta be more careful, and we gotta take care of each other.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Share your location.
Share your location.
Mm-hmm. You love it.
Did we tell them about? Did we tell the Chaos Kids about the time you thought I was at the hospital, and you wanted to know if I was okay?
No. But I will just say that our other sister said, you know what, Amber, that was good looking out. I was like, thank you. Cause I felt silly.
I stayed in this hotel for where we had our holiday party, stayed the night there. And I woke up in the morning and Amber texted me and she was like, are you okay, sister? And I was like, looking around my hotel room, lounging in my hotel bed, like, why wouldn't I be? What's going on? What is she? She's like, well, location says you're at Virginia Mason Hospital. And I was like, what? And then I like looked out the window. I was like, no, that's next door. I'm fine. I'm perfectly comfortable in my king size bed. 1,000 thread count cotton sheets.
Seriously, like 2 seconds after I sent it to the little dot that is you went bloop over to the hotel. You know how sometimes it does that? I was like, damn it. You did me dirty, Find My Friend app.
Sister, do you have some chaos for me?
I've got some chaos for you. We're going to talk about the Ford Pinto. Okay.
Yes. Okay. Tell me about the exploding car.
Yes. All right. Yes. Well, first we have to go into.
You remember that Casey drove a Pinto.
What a time while. To be alive. I know. I do know.
With a giant subwoofer in the back. So like the hatch opened up and you couldn't put anything back there because there was like a 20-inch subwoofer or whatever it was. It was huge. Took up like the whole back end of it. And then for a while we'd drive around and there was like no window back there because somebody had literally smashed in the back window and stolen his subwoofer. So not only were we driving a Pinto, but it was a Pinto without a back window. And then one time, okay, sorry.
I love it.
You just brought back all these memories. Mm-hmm. So one time we were down at the Denny's in Kenmore, which doesn't exist anymore. We were there late and we were doing some recreational substances that, you know, make you a little loopy. And we came out of the Denny's as we were like starting to peek and we got into the car and the back window was broken out, right? And it was summertime, so it wasn't like a big deal, but he'd parked underneath like the light in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. And so the whole car was filled with like gnats.
No.
Because they'd been attracted by the light. But like we were like tripping. So we were like freaking out, like batting these fucking gnats away. And then he literally like peeled out and we rolled down all the windows and we're like trying to clear him out with freaking out driving down Bothell Way like fucking crazy people.
Sorry, it doesn't Pinto. Get any classier than rolling through Kenmore in a Pinto filled with gnats.
Right?
Out of the Denny's. Oh my God, sister. Classy. That's amazing. I'm so glad you have that.
I'm so glad I finally had a reason to share it.
Oh man, you could have shared that anytime.
No, but now was the perfect time.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, all right. Yeah, so the Pinto.
Tell me about it.
All right. So we're going to Detroit in the 1960s, okay? Lee Iacocca was the executive at Ford Motor Company. He was responsible for designing the Mustang. He was super well respected in the auto industry. And Lee, at this time, felt like other countries were really surpassing Americans in the car industry when it came to very compact, affordable cars.
Yeah, I mean, Honda was starting to be a thing.
The VW Bug was rolling out. The Toyota Corolla was rolling out. And Ford didn't have anything that was small and inexpensive.
No, they were all giant boats, like land yachts.
Yep. So he replaced Bunky Knutson as the Ford president.
What?
That was his name.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So his first order of business as the new president was to make a compact car. He wanted it on the market in 24 months. And it usually takes, or it's supposed to take twice that long to like the engineering and the design and the safety testing and all that, right?
I mean, what little safety testing they had in the 60s.
Oh, He wanted it to weigh no more than 2,000 pounds and it couldn't cost the customer more than $2,000.
Oh.
And so here comes the Ford Pinto.
Rolling in my Pinto.
Oh my gosh. So the design of this Pinto, the gas tank started 6 inches from the rear bumper. And the bumper wasn't really a bumper. It was just decorative. So,
what?
Yeah. And there was also, okay, listen.
It's just for show.
There's a decorative bumper. And just on the other side of that is the gas tank in the back.
Perfect. That's perfect. No notes.
Mm-mm. There was also, okay, I'm going to do car talk here that I don't understand, so no follow-up questions. There were four.
Okay.
Not taking questions at this time.
Okay.
The other problem was that there was four large protruding bolts that faced the gas tank, and apparently this was what was holding in the differential. So if the Pinto was hit at even 5 miles per hour from the rear or the side, either the bumper would go straight into the gas tank or the bolts would go straight into the gas tank, rupturing it, puncturing the gas tank, and then the Pinto would just go up in flames.
Perfect. No notes.
And
ship it. As we say in the tech business, just ship it.
And Ford knew this, but they just went ahead and rolled the Pinto out anyway.
It's not a bug, Amber. It's a feature. Okay.
It's a feature. Oh my God. In one crash test where they were hit going 30 miles per hour, the tank punctured from the bolts and the entire 13 gallons of gasoline was spilled out within 60 seconds.
Wow.
It just, yeah.
You can't even fill a tank that fast.
I know. Yeah. So this guy, Ralph Nader, gets involved.
This guy, Ralph Nader. Maybe you've heard of him.
Political activist, environmentalist.
Politician.
Mm-hmm. At the time, he was an attorney involved in consumer protections.
Yeah, and he's the reason why we have seatbelts.
Yep. So he finds out that Ford had been concealing their crash test data for the Pinto.
Why would they do that?
I don't know. And that they had conducted all these tests before the Pinto was even rolled out. And they knew that this car was just combusting. So
it's kind of like how Peanut Dust Guy knew that there were just rats shitting in his peanut dust.
I just started eating peanut butter again. We can't go back.
I'm not going to let you forget. Rats. You made me listen to that story. You are not allowed to forget.
Rats were shitting in his peanut dust. Oh, God.
It's fine, you guys. Everything's fine. There's nothing to fear. Mm-mm. Just buy all the things.
buy all the things. Okay, so they're concealing this, and they knew that this was happening. And one of the solutions that would have actually prevented this from happening was a little plastic piece that cost around $1 and weighed less than a pound that would serve as a barrier between the bolts and the gas tank.
Plastic?
Yeah.
Plastic?
Mm-hmm. Like a heavy plastic, but still, it was a $1 fix, potentially, to keep those bolts from puncturing the gas tank. And Ford was like, nah, because Iacocca.
Well, because that made it less than, that made it more than 2000. It would have been 2001.
That's exactly right.
And they weren't trying to have a space odyssey.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Nope. And it would have been slightly over 2000 pounds. It would have been 2000 pounds and 1 ounce. And that was a hard no. Hard pass. Wow. So they also learned.
Fucking ego, man. Like the ego on that shit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And like they couldn't have shaved that shit off somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, that's not. No. They also learned that they could have used either a metal plate to reinforce the decorative bumper, meaning make a bumper, or.
Right. Like an actual bumper.
Right. Or a third solution would have been to like line the inside of the gas tank like a rubber bladder. That would have been an $11 fix and would have been the most thorough. But no, $11, no. Mm-mm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, just pull the tarp over. No, we don't have time for tarps. Do not cover the peanut dust.
No.
We're not paying for that.
So, and then on top of all of that, Iacocca wanted this Pinto to be fast-tracked because the other countries were in the lead and America needed to catch up. So this resulted in shitty engineering. And all the normal like pre-production engineering that would normally go into auto manufacturing was just skipped.
Amber, you're telling lies now because we all know that competition breeds innovation.
Well, innovative is one thing that you could call the Pinto.
I'm just saying capitalism is the driving force of all good innovation.
Mm-hmm.
Iacocca was a visionary, obviously.
I mean, well, we'll circle back to him. So, so they went straight into making the Pintos without any of the, they didn't pre-funk any of this. So by the time they realized that they had a seriously dangerous fuel tank, it was too late. There was already a bunch of Pintos on the road.
There's nothing to be done about it. You know, they're already out in the wild. I don't know what to tell you.
Some of the engineers
have them now. What are you going to take their cars away? No, no. What do you, we can't do anything now.
Mm-mm, it's too late. Nope. Mm-hmm. Some of the engineers who worked on the Pinto have since said that questioning anything, even safety, to the executives would have gotten you fired. So even though they knew this was a big problem, they were just like, okay.
They were just naysayers to innovation and progress, Amber.
Mm-hmm. And Iacocca's motto, around Ford at that time was safety doesn't sell.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
I know.
Amber, safety is not sexy.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. Safe and tea. That's right. Safety.
And you know what's so ironic about that is that like literally for how many decades now have you watched a car commercial and literally they're showing you and like touting all their safety features.
Yeah. Safety is trending now.
It has been for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wonder where that came from.
Our boy up there, the attorney. Okay. So.
Thanks, Nader.
Thanks, Nader. One engineer was quoted as saying, if we made a safer gas tank, you would only be able to get one set of golf clubs in the trunk.
How many sets of golf clubs does a person need?
Well, it's funny that you bring up the subwoofer and the busted out window because that was the big selling point for Pinto was like, we're not going to compromise this nice trunk space And by putting these, you know, barriers around the gas tank or whatever, it's going to cut into that trunk space. And we need to be able to do two sets of golf clubs in the trunk, me and my buddy.
What a weird measurement. What a weird measurement for trunk size.
Also, roll into the golf course with our cigars and then our car just fucking goes up in flames. Yeah.
Yeah, we're in a Pinto. I mean, come on. Clearly, these are like country club men that are making these fucking cars. They aren't actual like everyday fucking people.
So it's the 60s and the auto industry was still pretty much unregulated. But as more and more deaths start happening, our guy, Ralph Nader here, starts looking into it.
Okay.
Uh-huh. He writes a book called Unsafe at Any Speed. And the book is an immediate bestseller. And it has such an impact that the following year, Congress passes the Highway Safety Act of 1966, which requires the auto industry to be regulated.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm. But the audio, safety's not sexy. The auto industry, they took this just as like a starting point for negotiations.
Okay.
This is where it's.
I wonder, I'm going to ask a question. You may not know the answer, but I'm wondering like where in the midst of all this did like car insurance come into play and start becoming mandatory?
Ooh, I have no idea.
I'd be really curious to know.
That's a good question.
Because I don't know the history of the insurance industry. Because what I do know is that a lot of the safety features that we are just standard operating procedure now come from the, God, I think they're called the IIIA or something. And it's like the International Insurance Institute of America. I'm not exactly sure, but they basically, they're the ones that they crash test all the different directions and angles on like every new model of car that comes off of comes onto the market. And mm-hmm. they give them ratings and stuff. And then those ratings are literally like how insurance companies determine partly what your insurance premiums are. And that like, so there's this like feedback loop of like their findings going back into the auto industry and like making more like better and better upgrades on the safety stuff.
Yeah.
Because if I can't afford to insure the car because it's not safe, I'm not buying it. And that's right. Not good for the auto industry. If people right. aren't going to buy your car because it's not safe.
Correct. Well, that wasn't a problem here with the Pinto. All right. So they're like, cool, there's laws. Let's talk about that. So what they did was they proposed a negotiation to this law saying that safety features would be a big added cost. And so they wanted to do a cost benefit analysis. And Congress was like, sure, sure, sure. So in order to actually have an equation for this, in order to have a value of X, they put a value on human life as one of the inputs. Uh-huh. So everyone put their heads together. And in 1972, a value was agreed upon of $200,725.
That's how much one human life was.
That's a human. Uh-huh. They did this by taking the average age of someone who dies in a car accident and subtracted it from the average lifespan of an American. And they came up with 37 years. Then they determined how much that person would have made at their job in that time. And $200,725.
Capitalism.
Love it. And then what Ford did, just like for the sake of like quick mental math, was they just rounded that down to 200,000.
We're just doing napkin math. It's, you know what, you guys, we're just.
Okay. So Pintos became such an embarrassment for Ford that its advertising agency, they had an ad prior to this happening that was Pintos leave you with that warm feeling. That they ended up dropping.
Holy shit. No way. Like the Simpsons couldn't have written this better. You know what I'm saying? No fucking way.
Okay, so Congress agrees to this cost-benefit analysis, right? And so then Ford figures out that in order to do the $11 per car safety improvement thing, it would cost $113 million. And the human life lost was only $49 million. So they don't have to do the safety thing.
So it would cost us less to pay out for each person that died because of our shitty design. So we'll just pay out when people die instead of add safety features that would prevent people from dying.
Okay, so then, then there was another law that was passed that basically said any vehicle should be able to withstand a hit at 20 miles per hour without the car going up in flames.
That seems reasonable to me. Are we asking too much? Ford says, nope, you're asking way too much.
Ford was like, well, shit, that's not happening here. So what they did was they just went ahead and litigated for 9 years. Basically just
kept
intentionally delaying.
And continued producing Pintos this whole time.
More and more Pintos are just going on out. Yeah.
And people are buying it?
Yeah. And
that's the part that's wild to me.
Well, and I don't even know back then how much, like, the safety standards were just passed, but I have no idea if there was any mandatory transparency with that, you know?
Or if anyone was reporting on any of this to the public.
Yeah, or if people knew that that was happening because of manufacturing and not just idiot drive. I mean, I don't know. I have no idea. So it stops being funny now. So there were tens of thousands of people were badly burned and scarred. And this, you know, long delay from Pinto and their litigation put 10 million new Pintos on the road.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So finally, the litigation ends. And part of the new laws that went into effect after that stipulated that auto executives could be held criminally responsible for deaths or injuries directly linked to lack of safety features on their vehicles.
Oh.
So between 1971 and 1978, approximately 50 lawsuits were brought against Ford in connection with rear-end accidents in the Pinto. One person was awarded $3 million in damages. The jury awarded a landmark $125 million in punitive damages against several Ford Pinto drivers who were injured in their blaze of glory. So this one's really sad. On August 10th, 1978, 18-year-old Judy Ulrich, her 16-year-old sister Lynn, and their 18-year-old cousin Donna were in their 1973 Ford Pinto, and they were struck from the rear by a van in Indiana, and the gas tank exploded on impact, and the fire resulted in all three teenagers being burned alive.
Oh my God.
One thing that I read with the Pinto that was like one of the things that our buddy safety guy said was like all cars were fucking unsafe back then. But the reason why the Pinto was so problematic is because people were getting hit at such a low speed that they literally had no injuries anywhere on them, but they were stuck in the car and being burned alive.
That is fucking horrendous. That is horrific.
Yes, horrific. So in this particular case, Ford was charged with criminal homicide.
Wow.
Yeah. But after, again, back and forth and back and forth and appeal, the jury, they were ultimately found not guilty of criminal homicide.
What?
God. Our buddy Lee Iacocca here went on to Chrysler and actually saved them from bankruptcy in the 90s. And he was named as the 18th greatest CEO of all time.
Yep.
And wow, that's the story of the exploding Pintos.
Jesus.
I have these great photo. Well, they're not great, but people were like putting like window decals and stuff on the back of their Pinto that said, basically keep your following distance way back there because I'll blow up if you get too close.
shit. The original baby on board sticker.
I mean, it's not funny, but I mean,
if you know that
and you're driving around and like, if I get hit at 5 miles per hour, I'm going to go up in flames. Like,
well, I mean, you know, like, they were definitely marketing this car to people with low incomes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of people, this is probably like the car they could afford, you know?
God.
I wonder about that criminal law, that's if it's still on the books or if it's been modified, because there have been multiple cases of Tesla drivers dying when the Tesla exploded within the last like 5 years or whatever. Like that's clearly like malfunctioning vehicle.
Yeah.
How have they not been found criminally liable for that?
I have no idea.
I feel like those laws have been watered down since they were officially put on the books.
Probably
put on the books.
There was a lot more like the back and forth with the laws and the like the DOT and it was like so complicated that I was like, all right, I'm just going to stick with the Pinto, because if you start getting into the weeds with that stuff, it's like, what the fuck? Yeah.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course, because they have deep fucking pockets and fancy fucking lawyers on retainer, and they can just fight and argue and litigate and negotiate indefinitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pintos, man. Wild.
Wow. Sister.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
I know. A plastic piece. Like,
a dollar.
You know what was one thing that I read too, and it totally made me think of you, was another suggestion that obviously they weren't going to do because it cost too much, was to swap it out with the design of the Capri, because they were very safe.
The crappy.
And they were like, no, because that will exceed our 2,000 pounds, 2,000. No. But it was like a very similar kind of car.
Very similar.
Only done correctly. But Ford was like, nah, mm-mm. We're putting the gas tank on the bumper and at your own risk. Goodbye.
Jesus fucking Christ.
The crappy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Yeah. Sister, thank you for that. That was like legit, like, information I am glad I know. I've always I've known about exploding Pintos, but it was always like this joke, like,
oh yeah,
wow,
fucked.
Well, sister, I love you. This was amazing, per usual. Guys, don't get left behind. Mm-hmm. Get in on the Chaos Kids Club at the patreon.com/crime, wine, and chaos. $5 a month, you get a bonus episode every month, and you get to do virtual wine night with us, and we've started dropping our episodes a day early to our club members.
Yeah.
So,
and if you get do in it on that. Now, you might get in time for the next virtual wine night if you get in now.
Mm-hmm,
you don't want to miss it. Mm-hmm. It was a good chat last time.
We had a good time. Mm-hmm. The Chaos Kids are pretty fucking cool.
Make new friends.
Yeah, and you know, send us love letters or hate mail. I'll read the hate mail. Amber will read the love letters, but they all go to crimewineandchaos@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on X. You can follow us on TikTok, on Instagram. We're in all the places. You can follow me on X at Misnomers. And I'm also on the TikTok too. So, you know, come find us.
Yeah, do it.
Come find us and connect.
Oh, and thank you to Allie19 for the very nice review on the Apple Podcast app.
Oh, that was so sweet.
That
yes,
was so
thank
nice.
You.
Thank you. It made thank our you. Weekend.
We love all of those mm-hmm. written reviews on the Apple Podcast. They totally make our day. So thank
sure,
you for that.
Sure.
Sister,
did.
This Sister, was like really
so
chaotic today.
Chaotic. Yeah. Goodbye.
Oh my God. Bye. Bye.
Wine and Chaos is produced by 8th Direction Records. Artwork by Joshua M. Davis. Music by Paul Abner. If you would like to support the show, you can visit our Patreon page at crimewineandchaos.com/Patreon. Cheers.
I'm sorry, you guys. I don't speak Greek. It's Alonisos. Alonisos. Alonisos.